Hey, listeners, let's take a moment for a shout out to our sponsor, Squarespace. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for creators to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create an awesome website, connect with your audience, and sell anything all in one place, all on your terms. Even if you don't know where to start with creating a website, Squarespace has you covered with the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint. Choose from professionally created layout and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Easily launch your website and get discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools so you show up more often to more people. Flexible payment options make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accept credit cards, PayPal and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So, ready to get started? Head over to squarespace.com/gamescoop for a free trial. And when it's showtime, use our special promo code GAMESCOOP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Now, let's dive back into GameScoop. One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. This episode of GameScoop is brought to you by GameFly. What's up, everybody? Welcome to a very special Gamescom edition of GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Andrew Goldfarb.
Hello.
Tina Amini.
Scoop.
And a tip-top shape, Zach Ryan.
Scoop!
And we've got a great show for you right now. a little bit of a truncated show, but that's okay. We're very busy here at Gamescom. We're going to talk about some of the biggest news of the week, some of our favorite games. But first of all, Tina, this is your first Gamescom experience.
It is. Can you believe that?
Rate it on the IGN scale.
It's been very fun because we have the UK team here, and I like that part. So we're a big team.
Yeah, I hate when we have to put that phrase at the bottom of reviews and it's like in a little red box.
But what about the show? What do you think about the show here?
The show is insane.
Yeah.
I've never seen a show on this level before.
Yeah.
And I've mostly tried to avoid the insanity of it. Mm. So we've had our cushy little corner, which has been nice to take a bunch of our business meetings. I've gotten a chance to actually get my hands on to stuff more than I did at E3. So that's kind of cool.
Sounds like a 7.0.
Yeah. Good, not great.
Yeah.
But not great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
You think it's great?
I'll give it 8.1.
What, don't they expect 350,000 people this year?
No, 500,000.
Yeah.
350,000 people last
year. Exactly. So that was an interesting thing that we were talking about earlier in the week. 2016. 320,000 people. 2017, 350,000 people. 2018, 500,000.
It's too many people.
Why not?
It's insane.
I don't think there should ever be that many people in any one place.
It's legitimately terrifying to see the videos of people like coming into the convention center when the doors open.
We used to have a booth over in the public floor, and we could go up and look down on that entrance and see people running in. It looks like The Walking Dead. It's crazy.
Yeah.
let's talk about the biggest news of the week. The biggest news of the week may surprise you. Lots of, fair amount of announcements this week. We actually have a really good roundup article on IGN.com that you can check out of everything. But the number one article on IGN this week is Grandia 1 and 2 being remade for Switch and PC. And that's surprising to me for a couple of reasons. First of all, Grandia is a fairly obscure, older JRPG, like 25 years old at this point. And it's not even coming to PS4 and Xbox One is coming to Switch and PC. So, like, this is all cool. It's just surprising to me that it's been so popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit on NVC. Apologies if we're repeating topics, but, like, you know, with the Vita and the PSP dropping off the way that they have, it opens up this total niche market for the Switch to kind of dominate this JRPG corner that those platforms previously did. So it kind of makes sense that this handheld platform now gets a lot of these like niche JRPGs. And you can't really go wrong with Grandia. Grandia 2 is like one of my favorite RPGs of all time.
Okay, so you've played these games.
Yeah.
Anyone else played these games?
I've never even touched these
games. Same.
Andrew's never even heard of Grandia.
Yeah, so. I literally thought it was Grandia.
No, I've been aware of these games. I never got a chance to play them myself. Yeah. First one was Saturn and PlayStation 1. Mm-hmm. Second one was Dreamcast and PS2.
Yeah.
So give us the spiel, the Grandia spiel.
It's sort of a
spiel sounds German.
Yeah, honestly, it's not anything super special for a JRPG. It's the world's ending. You're
Can't
a plucky
wait.
Young hero. Like you're gonna put together a team and go out and save the world. I think at the time it was just one of those things where like. Graphically, it looked amazing on the Dreamcast. The combat system is really unique. But overall, it's just a JRPG that's really great and really fond memories of,
Was it one of those things where it's going to hold up now that we have decades of JRPGs?
Certainly not. Absolutely not, no. Try to go back and play any JRPG from like the early 2000s and before, and it's painful. Mm. So slow. Personally, so boring. Like, I've tried to go back and play Final Fantasy IX, and it's like, how did I do this? Like, how did I sit through this when I was a kid? Like, I love those games, but the way that games are built now just leaps and bounds ahead of where we were then, and it's really, really tough to... I feel that way about not just RPGs, just a lot of genres in general.
Yeah, that's true. That's
RPGs tend to be so grindy when they're from back in the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love a good grind. Like, I don't mind
grind.
Yeah, grind. Yeah.
My God.
Grindia. Surely this is the first time this has been called.
I think Grandia was made by former or developers who had worked on Lunar, mm-hmm. another very
Lunar, Silphid, pretty prestigious company, Game Arts.
Mm-hmm. So I anticipate the announcement that Lunar is being remade.
I would Lunar and Lunar 2, I might make an exception for because those games are full on bangers.
Like, anyway, that was the biggest news of the week on IGN.com.
That's wild.
Shenmue 3 got a release date.
Well, that also got a release date. Yeah.
Another one of those. Does it hold up?
Well, I was going to say I feel like the reason it's so big is because of Switch. Kind of Zach's point. Because the other big news story this week was Octopath Traveler topped the sales charts for last month.
Yeah, we just found that best-selling game of July.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Speaking of JRPGs, I guess people do like them.
Yeah, that's true. But even an Octopath Traveler feels like 5 times faster than, an RPG of yore.
And even then, don't you have to play 10 to 15 hours just to start to break through?
Look at this guy's going to send out some text messages here.
I got to answer this real quick. It's just as a side note to Grandia 1 and 2 being remade, they also announced this week that Langrisser 1 and 2 are being remade as well. And these are even more obscure than Grandia.
Zach was joking about me never having heard of Grandia. I've literally never heard of this game.
So there was a Sega Genesis game called Warsong in the U.S., and that was Langrisser, the Western release of Langrisser, and it was a very cool tactics turn-based strategy, and I liked, but I hadn't even thought of it in 30 years, 20 years. Yeah, so that game and its sequel are now being remade also. So it's okay, it's cool, it's super cool, it's just wow, I wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah. And
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, no. That's wild.
But I'm glad it's happening.
GameScoop is sponsored by Gamefly, the best way to buy and rent your favorite games. Gamefly.com gives you access to 9,000 titles, which are mailed directly to your door. For one monthly fee, you can play the latest and greatest games for as long as you want, with no late fees or due dates, ever. When you get tired of a game, all you have to do is mail it back, and they'll send you the next title on your list. Today, every Scoop listener gets access to a free premium 30-day trial by going to Gamefly.com/Scoop. That premium trial lets you rent 2 titles at the same time, and you get it by going to Gamefly.com/SCOOP. Gamefly.com/scoop. Check it out.
Alright, also news this week. We got a release date for Devil May Cry 5. And that release date is March 8th, 2019. So that puts it right in between the biggest release date of 2019 so far, February 22nd, which is Anthem? Metro Exodus,
everything on
Days Gone, anything February else 22nd. On that same day? Crackdown 3 on that day. So quickly followed by Devil May Cry 5 on the 8th, and then right after that is The Division 2 on March 15th. Mm-hmm. So very busy
and
release.
My birthday on March 5th is part of that
most
calendar.
Important.
Yeah, yep, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So
we're reviewing you too.
Yeah. Oh no.
I'll get you a copy of Devil May Cry 5 for your birthday.
Aw.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad.
Our own Joe Scrubbles got to check out Devil May Cry 5 this week at Gamescom, and I think he had a blast. He said it felt great.
We had it on the live show, and just watching, you know, they came out and did a live demo of it, and just watching them play it was a lot of fun because you kind of forget about that stylish action, you know, like, and it's really been refined since I haven't played a Devil May Cry since probably 3. Okay. And so it's been a while, and watching them play it, I was like, oh yeah, I could get into some DMC. This looks like a lot of fun.
The combo stuff is so cool.
Yeah. It's also just so ridiculous, so over the top. I love it.
Well, yeah, you mentioned DMC. The last game was DMC. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they've sort of kept the visual style of DMC, but I think the combat's supposed to feel more like classic. Mm-hmm. Devil May Cry in this case.
Right.
With still the over-the-top quality, of course.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Mm. I don't know, are any Devil May Cry fans up here?
I like DMC.
Yeah?
Yeah,
I liked DMC, the last one?
The last one that came out. I thought it actually was a good spin from it. And it doesn't seem too removed, but I haven't gotten my hands on it yet, so couldn't say.
Yeah. Well, that one looks pretty cool, like you said, March 8th. And then we also found out that Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, also coming the same month. I think it's March 22nd.
Yeah, I believe that's right.
And we had that on the show. I don't know if it was new stuff that they're showing.
It was. Yeah. Well, so that was the BCD demo. Here it is now. This is the BCD demo from E3, I believe, that they just brought to Gamescom and showed it publicly. This game looks so awesome. I know you're not a Dark Soulsman.
But I'm a Ninjaman.
Yeah.
So I could make, you know.
Yeah.
This is more appealing to me, I think.
The locomotion here and the way that later when we get into the enemies and the sneaking and stuff, it looks so cool. It reminds me so much of like Tenchu, except it looks like really, really difficult. I'm very into this. I mean, FromSoft guy, so this
FromSoft
is really
made Tenchu, and then when they were teasing this game, a lot of people wondered maybe this is a new Tenchu game.
But I mean, for all intents and purposes, like it very well could be like a spiritual successor or something.
Yeah, it still has like bonfires and stuff, though, right?
I don't know. Bonfire. I'm not sure.
I mean,
I don't think bonfires existed in feudal Japan.
Oh, that's true.
It's hard to tell.
What we're seeing here doesn't really remind me of Dark Souls or Bloodborne.
Combat-wise, this looks a lot like Bloodborne, a lot like Dark Souls. The way that you're dodging, parrying, you know, like moving around your enemy to find an opening.
Yeah.
For sure. But there's other things like the fluidity with which the character moves, like the verticality of it, totally new from FromSoft. I'm really excited to, you know.
Lucy O'Brien actually played this game this week, and she had a write-up for us as well. But she said that it kicked her butt quite a bit, and that even coming from like a Souls background, she just couldn't quite get her grasp around it, and they kind of had to like fast forward.
In the same way that Bloodborne is faster than Souls, like this looks even faster than that.
Yeah.
And I love the idea. So like the whole thing is like they called it a shinobi prosthetic on your left arm,
cool.
And you can trick it out with different things. Like in this demo, we see him like whip out an axe and cut down. Shields, but apparently, and the grappling hook as well. But like, apparently, you can equip a bunch of different stuff on that arm and have all these different powers to cycle through. So
this game looks awesome.
Yeah, I'm really stoked for this.
And I'm glad it was just sort of revealed, I think, at E3. And I'm glad we're getting the release date less than a year.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's revealed. Yeah. So that's another one I look forward to playing next fall.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of games that people are looking forward to, I finally got to see that behind closed doors demo of Cyberpunk 2077 that everyone else saw at E3. And so I finally got to see it here at the show. And there's some slight tweaks, I think, to what they were showing at E3.
Yeah, they let the audience members kind of choose certain things.
Yeah, make some choices. Yeah. Choose the gender of your character at the beginning of the game. I think they're showing just female at E3.
Mm-hmm.
Now it can be male or female. So we play as a male. So here's the thing. I was very impressed. I thought it looked really cool.
Right.
Maybe not quite as impressed as everyone else seemed to be at E3. Because everyone was coming out of that demo acting like this was the most amazing thing they'd ever seen.
Right.
Oh, well, your expectations
were
raised.
That's true. Right. That too. I thought it seemed like a very, very cool open world RPG. The most impressive part of it to me was how densely packed the city was. It felt like a real living city. And as you moved about it, going from mission to mission, there were no loading screens. Everything is seamless. Tons of stuff is going on around you, so it feels like a real living city. But aside from that, it feels like, you know, just like fairly typical open world RPG that we've seen before.
It's the little touches, right?
Yeah.
Like for me, I totally agree. I think it's reminiscent of a lot. Like combat's like a little Borderlands-y, and you know, there's a lot of games that I see sort of influences from, and not as much from Witcher, actually.
Yeah.
But it is that moment when you see Night City, and when you see all the people, and they're not just like the typical NPCs like going through like a set animation. Like they really feel like they're living, and they like bump into each other, and they like interact in ways that seem, at least in this demo, really meaningful.
I
think with any demo like this, though, who knows
exactly
if that's gonna be anywhere near what that game actually is like.
The way that when I saw the demo and Andrew and I saw it together, actually, felt about it, what's that?
We
held hands through the whole demo. The way that I felt about watching it, the thing that really blew me away was the the options that you have, the ways, the many different ways that you can complete objectives. You know, they showed us one particular way that they completed there's this whole thing where you had to get a chipset and then sell that and do this other thing. But like, the way that they're talking about it, they said things like, well, you can keep that chipset and sell it for yourself and then buy modifications. Or you can pay off somebody and have them go into this building and like deal with whoever the enemy is there to get the chips. Or you know, like, there's all these, or it was a robot. That's what it was, not a chip. Yeah. And there's all these different scenarios in which like you could work around that objective to get to your goal. And I think that to me is what was so forward thinking about it. Like that was what I walked out of there thinking a lot about. It's like, man, if there are this many options for every mission in the game,
Yeah, people literally gasped when they said at the very end of our demo, they were like, we also could have done this, this, and this. And people were like,
One guy fainted. Just like, whoa!
Out of the floor.
There's a lot of pearl clutching.
Yeah. It's also the aesthetic, too. I mean, like, it contributes both just visually because it's really nice to look at and all of the different characters, like with the woman missing half her face,
so
like the android missing half her face.
So cool.
It's that, but it's also the fact that you know that also contributes inevitably to gameplay. Like, the guns all look interesting. The spider bot thing that we saw in the demo looks really interesting and, like, added kind of a different gravity to the combat, or it looked to, because you know we didn't get our hands on it, so we can't say exactly.
Yeah,
but it seemed like it made it more diverse, kind of an environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this isn't a totally fair comparison, but like it's not as visually striking as God of War. Of course, God of War is very much more focused and there aren't as many variables that can happen at one time.
I don't know. I disagree. Like I think that it is equally visually striking as God of War. I think that the artistic direction, especially, was really really mind blowing to me. Mm-hmm. Like I love the fact that it looks like so almost stereotypically cyberpunk, but also so unique at the same time.
And
like the primary like antagonist in the demo that we saw are these dudes that are like obsessed with modifying themselves so much to the point that like half their faces are missing.
That's really
and they
cool.
have like
I do really
it's
like
really
that.
Really smart
and you
stuff.
Could tell it's part of the culture too, because you see the like different kinds of groups of people, like, you know, these agent style looking people that also clearly have modifications, but then you see the more like street punk style too.
Right. And Damon, you actually asked a question on our live show that I really dug about, what was it called? Like modification insanity or something? Like,
yeah, they call it
you mod
cyber,
yourself to the point like...
In the tabletop game, I think it's called cyber psychosis.
Right. Like you mod yourself to the point that like you just go crazy. And I think that's a really interesting concept too. Like it's be an interesting mechanic to have in the background. Like what's your level of like cyber poisoning, you know?
Yeah. I think everyone we've seen in the game has some sort of modifications.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to introduce characters that have sort of tried to avoid that, tried to stay pure.
Like that. Like that
form.
Episode of Black Mirror where she doesn't have the chip, you know?
Yeah. Which one is that? Which episode is that?
The worst episode, the one where you record all your memories and play them back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
from the first season.
Episode?
No, it's the worst because it's like gut wrenching.
Oh, yeah. I see. Yeah.
There are a lot of
it's probably the it's probably my favorite episode, but it's like one that you watch like, oh God, no.
Yeah.
As far as the first person perspective, I still see a lot of people sort of complaining about that. That doesn't bother me at all. However, I don't fully buy the developers' reasoning behind that. They said they made it first person to maximize immersion, but then when you shoot people, numbers fly out of them. So it's like, okay, I don't know if that's
a lot of developers say that about like third person, but pulled in cameras too, like over the shoulder cameras. Yeah. They say it's for immersion, but it's just whatever style you prefer.
So you guys, you're still feeling pretty strong about Cyberpunk?
I really adore it, and I think it's funny. It reminds me so much of like I can name games. It reminds me of, but truthfully, I walked out more thinking of like Blade Runner and Fifth Element. And like it reminds me more of like worlds we've seen in film than other games.
Yeah, it seems to have a lot of like pop culture kind of references.
It sounds hyperbolic, but I still believe like walking out of that demo, I turned to Andrew and was like, I felt like I saw the future of gaming, like the way that game, the ideas that are there. It just seems very forward thinking to me.
I think it's also the fact that we saw such a big chunk of the game.
Yeah,
like,
the demo was like an hour long.
Yeah,
very long.
Yeah.
Most like E3 Gamescom demo was like
15 minutes,
20 minutes, and that's a huge chunk of the game. And we only had time to do two missions, basically.
Right. That extended one. It's like a side quest. It's not even like we've seen a story mission yet.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to come across as a hater. I think it's a very very cool game.
Mm-hmm. I think it's okay to like be excited about something and not be ecstatic about it. And I think that's something that we, you know, often get criticized for, but it's like, it's okay to be like, hey, this thing is good, not amazing. So,
I know there's a lot of hunger out there to see gameplay, so I don't know. Hopefully you'll get to see some of that sometime soon. Zach, we've been running this live show here all week long.
Yeah.
on here at Gamescom.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the highlights that we had on the show. For me, I thought I'm really liking Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And
yeah.
I think, Andrew, you just got a chance to play that today, right?
Played it this morning. It is so hard.
Well, the demo they're showing here is weird. It's late game, like after the story's been completed.
I kind of did that.
Yeah. They're showing a boss fight with Medusa, which is crazy.
Yeah, and even like, so they said it was one of the very like towards the end side missions you can even get, like one of the final ones, and yeah, it's like every enemy is at max level, and you really have to, like, when I started the demo, the guy was like, oh, do you play the E3 build? And I was like, no, and he was like, there's so much to the controls of it, like, yeah. you have to know, like, it does feel soulsy. You do have to be smart about parrying and dodging, and like there's certain visual cues for things that, like, you it's an unavoidable attack, and
you have to be a lot more deliberate with all of your moves.
Yeah.
And then, like, so when you go and you initiate the mission, you're supposed to attack these guards as you're seeing right now on screen. And I failed so many times that I went back, killed the guards first, then picked up the mission.
Oh, you played it too?
Yeah. I did. I played it yesterday. And after that, like, I had this massive bounty on my head, and a bunch of mercenaries came after me, and one had a bear, and I felt really bad about killing
the
bear.
And that's that thing in the bottom right is, like, as you basically, like, make a faction angry, there's this bounty system that's really, really cool. It's almost like GTA style.
It's like
it is.
It's stars in GTA.
And
right?
The mercenaries are tough to kill, and they do frequently have these, like, massive bears, these pet bears that come along with them. And I did feel really bad for killing the bear.
I would feel terrible.
Yeah, and I told the developer who was helping me with the demo that, and he said, well, actually, you can spec yourself in such a way that you can befriend the bears, essentially. And you don't have to kill them. You can actually walk up to them, and they're your pet. They help you in combat and stuff. Definitely doing that instead.
Well, how do you feel about how heavily Assassin's Creed is leaning into mythology now? You're fighting Medusa in the game now.
I love it.
Yeah?
I think it's so... I mean,
it doesn't bother me at all.
I've said for years, like, this is the kind of thing that gets me interested in Assassin's Creed again, because I think for a while it was so... Just every single year it felt like you know, obviously they changed the setting, but it had been a while since they did something dramatically different, and I think Origins was really, really smart in mechanics and in making it feel more like a proper RPG.
Yeah.
And now if they're getting weird with it, like, I would love to play an Assassin's Creed game in space. Or like do weird stuff. I think that would make it so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it makes for really interesting, like, just fighting Medusa was really difficult, and I don't necessarily care about Medusa as a fictional character, per se, but, like, I don't feel one way or another about it, but
I love
fighting
her
Medusa was...
My whole bedroom decked out Medusa.
We call ourselves snakeheads.
You're a Medusa-man?
Yeah, exactly.
But it made for a really tough fight, and I didn't feel like, Andrew, did you get up to the Medusa boss fight?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I beat it.
Yeah,
pathetic.
Neither. A lot of people in our demo
did it. I think Joe Scrabble's played it, too.
A couple people did. But I didn't feel overwhelmed by the stone minions she sent out.
Over 150,000 points of damage.
Sorry, you were saying?
Yeah, frequently I feel like in boss fights, like, part of the round is, oh, okay, you know, the minions are coming out now.
Yeah.
And you have to defeat them. And I didn't feel overwhelmed by it at all. It felt more like I was facing Medusa, and then that was just an occasional wave that I had to deal with.
They're actually really fun, because they're, like, little, like, stone men, and they don't take, like, nearly as many hits as, like, a normal non-stone man. They're good men to fight. I recommend fighting those men.
Zach, I know, like me, you've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed Origins lately.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling about Odyssey?
It's funny because I'm still not finished with the Assassin's Creed Origins. It's something that
nobody is.
No one's actually ever finished that game. It's a game that I've been playing, like I played The Witcher off and on over the course of, you know, a year, and I keep going back to it and being like, oh yeah, I really love this. But that being said, like, I'm so stoked for Odyssey. I think it looks great. Like, I'm more into Greek mythology than I am into Egyptian mythology. Mm-hmm. This is more in my wheelhouse. Some of the stuff, like, the combat looks even more evolved than it was from the last game. And I really like what you can see here in the, if you're watching this version of, in the left-hand side and left-hand corner here, there's all these additional powers that you can do that they mix into combat that I think look really cool. Like, in this Medusa fight, you see this, like, big area of effect attack that's, like, it's really cool. I'm stoked for it.
Yeah.
And the one at the bottom on the wheel on the left is the Spartan kick.
Yeah.
It's like, it's when you have someone on the edge of, like, a cliff and
it's so good.
It feels so good.
That's
and
awesome.
You know, you have to say the line when you do it, too, like, every time.
Oh, I screamed it in the demo room. It was really startling to everybody,
We also found out this week that Assassin's Creed will be taking a year off next year. It used to be an annualized franchise, then took a year off before Origins, and Origins seemed to really benefit from that. So I think some people were a little bit skeptical about Odyssey when it announced it would be the next year, even though Odyssey is looking great. But now, apparently, the franchise is going to be taking the year off next year. So that leads me to ask, what's going to be Ubisoft's big fall game?
I assume Watch Dogs 3 is coming, right?
Yeah.
Their cycle is really smart now. They, for a long time, Assassin's Creed was annualized, but it was always out of Montreal. And then they expanded to Toronto, and I mean, this game is from Quebec. Like, I think Ubisoft does a really good job. They have like a billion studios in every continent. Yeah. So I think it makes sense that they're leveraging those. And I would imagine the next big project would be from Toronto. Like, I don't think we've seen them.
Interesting. All right, I know we're running short on time. Zach, what were some other highlights from our live show this week?
Really quickly, just to blow through, like, I really love The Messenger.
I love The Messenger, too.
The Messenger is an incredible 8/16-bit platformer in a Ninja Gaiden vein.
Yep.
I finally got an opportunity to play Starlink. And
the Battle for Atlas from Ubisoft?
Yeah. So Starlink, I think Ubisoft is doing something really smart in their partnerships with Nintendo. I played it on Switch. You know, this is the second time I feel like they've shown off a game that we've been like, why? And then when you get an opportunity to play it, it's really great.
It's really surprising.
Yeah, and it feels to me like a Star Fox successor.
It really does.
The Star Fox game that we should have gotten on the Wii U.
I just did a little bit of the demo at E3. I did like the boss fight.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Boss? Yeah. It completely feels like a Star Fox 64
Super cool.
boss fight. It's great.
Mm-hmm. The last game that I wanted to mention was, Resident Evil 2.
Resident Evil 2 looks amazing, right?
Yeah, they showed off Claire gameplay here at Gamescom, and the craziest thing about this is, like, I remember playing Resident Evil 2 as a kid and being scared of the monsters in that game, and they are nothing compared to what it looks like in full HD. Like, here's William Birkin with an eye, like, busting out of his shoulder, and it's so awful and terrifying. Like, I love it. I can't wait.
Yeah, like, Resident Evil 2 had a fixed camera in the original game, and now they're going full 3D.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, not even, like, it's interesting to go back to third person after Resident Evil 7, right, being first person.
100%. Yeah. It's almost like two different series, you know?
Yeah, like, almost like, almost like 7 kind of started a new branch of
what
Resident
Evil. This one's more in the vein of 4.
Yeah.
I was actually really surprised when they revealed 7, because the rumor for years was just they were going to do a hard reboot of that franchise.
Yeah.
So I was actually surprised it even was called 7.
Yeah,
it's really good. Okay, so Tina and Andrew, what are some other things you guys got to play and that really stood out to you?
I saw Control, which I was really excited about because I'm a big Remedy fan.
Ah, that's that one that was announced at E3.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so they were actually pretty forthcoming with what they talked about. Even at E3, it was on our live show then too, and they explained a lot about it, how, you know, you're this woman with supernatural powers, and then you infiltrate the FBC, which is like the FBI, but in like a supernatural world, and then you become the FBC director through some weird ritualistic, like, demonic process, and then you gain more powers.
Like the FBI.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a little bit like their, you know, area, like, you know, their Area 51 version. So it was really interesting to see how that combat actually worked, even though I didn't get a chance to play it myself. But your weapons can kind of transform, your pistol, which only the director of the FBC gets, can transform, and you get a lot of powers too that let you either traverse, so it's kind of like Metroidvania in the way that there are a lot of open rooms in the hub, which is called the Oldest House, and then you go through like those rooms. If you have abilities like levitate, you can levitate over gaps, that kind of thing. But there's a lot of personality. Like, this janitor is just kind of delirious and sings to himself, and you try to talk to him and he just keeps singing, and you're like, oh, okay.
Well, so I'm still not totally clear on, like, what kind of game this is, what the gameplay is.
It's a supernatural action-adventure game.
There you go.
If you remember some of the abilities you had in Quantum Break, if you played that, it's similar. So they kind of borrowed that and ditched the whole, like, you know, narrative thing that they were doing with the TV show tie-in episodic thing.
Which is third-person, like, Alan Wake style in terms of how to control stuff, right?
Yeah. You have a pistol and you have some special powers. You can bring up a shield from the rocks on the ground. You can launch items at people. And then some of the enemies, which are these, like, possessed FBC agents, because there was an invasion in the FBC, so they also can do similar things that you can do. So there's probably some weird tie-in.
Yeah.
When this was revealed at E3, I compared it to PsyOps or Galarians, and then I realized
PsyOps.
I realized that nobody remembers what those games are.
So. Dude, PsyOps is a game. People send that in as a suggestion for 20 questions every so often. We can't do this one. No one's gonna guess PsyOps.
Yeah.
Wait, is that the one, like, the Mindgate conspiracy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
It is.
I also played My Friend Pedro.
Which looks amazing.
It
looks
cool.
Yeah,
it is so good. And it was difficult to kind of get my head around the fact that you can, like, spin, dash, but then also slow down time and jump and flip and then, like, shoot in different directions, but it's not a twin stick shooter, so you have to aim, target, like grab on with that, and then use the same joystick to target someone else, all while in slow-mo, all while probably flipping. I mean, if you want to be stylish.
Yeah, so this is that, like, it's a 2D side-scrolling action game, but it's supposed to give you that sort of, like, stylish Matrix gunfu.
Mm-hmm. If you're watching right now, this dude is like flipping a skateboard and shooting a guy, and like there's at one point I think he flips the skateboard just into an enemy's head and kills him, and it's so ridiculous and so funny. Like, we were honestly cheering during the live show watching it. Here's the best part. Just jump off of one skateboard onto another.
Exactly.
It's like ballet. Like,
it really is.
So cool.
And you're multitasking so much. And then there's actually a ton that you can do too. Like, there's a frying pan. You can kick the frying pan and then shoot at it because it ricochets. Kind of like this, actually. Yeah. So any kind of metal object.
I mean, it just makes me think of Deadpool, honestly. Like, it's like in a very
It does feel a lot like Deadpool.
His fighting style is definitely Deadpool. And he looks kind of like Deadpool.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, wait a minute.
Except the Brazilian version, because the developer's girlfriend is from Brazil, and she helped, give some input into the design.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Well, so that's why his name is Pedro.
Is it difficult to, when you were playing, is to make it this stylish?
Sorry?
Like, how is it difficult to play and make it this stylish?
It was initially, because I couldn't wrap my head around the controls, because there's so much going on. You legitimately are multitasking, and especially taking the target and shooting two at once was really difficult for me to flip and time freeze and all that other stuff. But you get into it, and eventually, like, it does get pretty comfortable, and then you feel you feel pretty great, just like it looks.
Do we know what the timetable for this game is? When this is coming out?
He just said next year.
It's been in development. He said he's been developing it for 4 years. It's one guy.
Yeah, one guy.
It's one of those.
One of the things that's so smart to me about this game is that one of the features that it has built into it is a GIF generator. So if you do something super cool, you can GIF it and share it immediately. And I can't think of a better way to promote this game.
Yeah, that's
like,
absolutely.
Seeing this game like flood Twitter with GIFs of just this like crazy shit, I think is so smart. Like, that's going to be an easy way to sell it.
Yeah, when you end a level, it shows you your score and it does a replay of what it thinks was like your best moment. So that's like the giveable moment.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Very cool. So cool.
All right, Andrew, how about you?
I saw a game called Sable.
Which one is that?
Sable looks so cool.
It's so cool. It's like it has this very hand drawn style. It looks like kind of like Mobius, like that style of art, and it's this really cool like. So the game, it's like exactly up my pretentious indie nerdy alley. It's there isn't really like there are puzzles that you can do that seem actually really, really cool and very hard, but the entire game is basically you're a young girl and you're from this society where you go on almost like a pilgrimage, like in, you know, Amish culture, like basically it's like she's
Amish,
left home.
So it's Amish in the city.
It's Amish in the city, that's right. She's left home, and the thing about this game are these masks, and so in kind of the place she's from, all the children wear these masks that don't really mean anything. They're just masks for children. But then when you go out in the real world as an adult, you're trying on different masks, and that is like obviously like a metaphor for being an adult and choosing what your life is going to be and figure out what kind of person you are. And it's just basically this gigantic, very Breath of the Wild style, Breath of the Wild like open world kind of. You can climb anything. There's no set order. You can do whatever you want. You can instantly beat the game. Like, you can just walk out, grab a mask, be like, this is the one I want, and go home. Like, there's no like real sense of urgency or anything. It almost reminded me too of The Witness a little bit. Like, that idea of just walking around with like a very low stakes environment. Mm-hmm. But they do this cool thing. You have this motorbike, which I guess is the equivalent of like the horse in Breath of the Wild. And you can upgrade it in all these weird ways, and you can find
the motorbike in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like a pony. Yeah. That's a good point. But it just looks so beautiful, and the guys who are making it
Japanese breakfast.
It's the guys making it. It's two guys, and they're working out of one of the guys' parents' shed, so they're called Shedworks.
That's amazing.
Fits.
So what are you doing? Are you dungeon crawling, puzzle solving? Like, what's the
There's
deal?
There's a lot of the puzzles. I feel weird comparing it so often to Breath of the Wild, but it really is. That's the best way to understand what it is.
That's a good comparison. That game's pretty good.
The climbing, you have like stamina when you climb, and you have like it looks like kind of like the paraglider in Zelda, but you have this orb you can float in for a short time, so like you can jump off a cliff and like gracefully float down.
Cool.
But it just seems like it's so beautiful, and the style is so unique, and I'm really curious to feel what it, because we saw a hands-off demo. Mm-hmm. I would love to play it and see what it feels like.
Cool.
Looks very cool. We probably have time for one more highlight.
Ooh. I would say Team Sonic Racing, which I was very surprised to kind of be impressed by.
Wow.
You know, kart racers, everyone's going to compare them to Mario Kart. People do pretty standard stuff. The twist in this one is you can see on the left you have teams. And what I thought was interesting is you can come in last place and still technically win a race because it's the combined point total of your team. And so the whole point of it isn't really just about staying in first place. It's about working together with the people on your team. And I don't know, I had a lot of fun with it, even just playing with bots. I feel like with friends and when you're coordinating stuff, this would probably be so fun and so frantic. Hmm. It's sort of more, it honestly feels more like a party game than a racing game once you incorporate that side of it.
So this game is going to make you hate your friends?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Like any good party game does.
I was going to say, like most Sonic games do.
Is this a this year game? It's 2018?
I believe so, yeah. And it's coming to Switch and other consoles and PC. And cool. It's just super fun. I mean, honestly, I really like All-Stars, Racing All-Stars Transformed. And so this is just a fun little continuation of that.
Yeah, Racing All-Stars, I feel like, was kind of this like cult hit that sort of gained this momentum after it was released, and people like, no, actually, that's a really great kart racer. You should play it before you're, you know, knocking it. And all the reception for this that I've seen has been really, really positive.
And, you know, we're waiting. Mario Kart World Tour, I think it's called, the mobile one, was announced, but we haven't seen it. You know, while we wait, I think this is a totally fun kart racer.
Well, Andrew, you've shown great restraint in not bringing up Persona 3 and 5, Dancing in Moonlight and Dancing in Starlight.
Saw those again.
Yeah.
Very cool. I got to see them in English finally.
What's it like to preview a game that you've already beaten?
What is that like?
It's weird because I'm getting context and cutscenes of like dialogue I didn't understand when I played it in Japanese, so it's like I understand why I'm doing stuff.
Yeah. Man. You're crazy,
I'm
man.
So weird. I'm so weird.
I'd like to know why you do some stuff as well. Yeah.
Why are you the way you are?
Yeah. Why are you like this?
You made me like this.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's just a few highlights from Gamescom this year. Once again, I recommend you check out our wrap-up article on IGN.com. It goes through everything. Lots more detail in there. Lots more game announcements. So coming out of the show, that's sort of like the last really big trade show of the year. There's TGS, but that's sort of been de-emphasized in recent years. So I guess there's also Paris Games Week.
Paris Games Week. And that's where Sony tends to go
big. PSX is at the end of the year. But I'm kind of thinking about to set up stuff that we'll be playing this fall. Yeah. Coming out of Gamescom, what's your number one pick that you're excited for this fall, Tina?
Oh, boy. What do we got this fall? Refresh my memory.
What are you excited for? It could be Red Dead. Could be Spider-Man. Could be Tomb Raider.
Red Dead's a good choice. I think I would say Red Dead. Yeah, I want to go back and explore that world. And what they're talking about with that game sounds like revolutionary from what Red Dead 1 was doing really well.
Mm-hmm. Zach?
I think Shadow of the Tomb Raider for me.
I'm really excited for that one, too.
Yeah.
Andrew?
Spider-Man for me. I mean, we're going to play it probably right when we get back from this trip. But
yeah, I think maybe some people at IGN already have that game, so that's very exciting.
Yeah, I can't
Scoop.
Wait.
I'm going to go with Mega Man 11. I'm going to show some love to my man, Mega Man. I'm super excited for that
to
one.
My Mega Man.
Although, I don't wedded we'd have that one on the show this week. I wish we had that one on
the
show.
They were here. Zach. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Zach.
I'll call Dr. Light and see what I can do.
Anyway, that's the wrap-up from Gamescom this year. Thank you for tuning in for our coverage. You can find out more about all these games on IGN.com. And as soon as we have more information on all the games we've covered for you this week here at Gamescom, we'll share them with you right here on IGN.com. Take care, everybody.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the past?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.